Welcome to It Could Happen Here. I'm Garrison Davis. This is part two of our terrorism roundtable discussion. If you haven't listened to part one already, I would recommend you scroll back, listen to the previous episode, and then continue on from here so you have kind of context to what exactly we're talking about. Anyway, this is part two of our discussion in the woods. I hope you enjoy. Something that was talked about earlier this year after January 6th was like, should the government ban Telegram, right? That was the thing. And there's a lot of arguments are like, no, absolutely not. And does anyone want to speak on that? Because if I want to talk about the government's response to these things, you know, that's a very government-y thing to do. Be like, oh, people are organizing on this platform, get rid of the platform, problem gone. Nope. And that's not how that works. Emmy, do you want to talk on that a little bit?
Sure. Getting rid of the platform doesn't necessarily help, especially when it's something that is important, such as, like, you know, encrypted communication, which is something that more people than just Nazis need.
Yes.
Yeah, and that resource should not be cut off. And there's also kind of the bad precedent to be set if the government is deciding which forms of speech it needs to have complete access to. I don't love that. The other thing is that if we nuke Telegram, right, they don't disappear. They form new networks in other places.
They're still there.
They are still there.
And then they have to do more things in person.
Right.
They're still there. They're just harder to
monitor.
Telegram is nice.
People are absolutely correct when they say deplatforming works, because it works for the platform. And a lot of people just want that. A lot of people just don't want to see Nazi shit, and they're fine with, you know, deplatforming, and they say this works, and they have data to back up that it does work. But it works for the platform, but the people still exist.
Well,
people are still boosting their own shit. And when they bring up building their own alt-tech platforms, you know,
it only works if you get there early.
Yeah.
And there is elements that, deplatforming is a wider thing, can work especially for, like, in-person stuff. But, yeah, for the sort of thing you're mentioning, yes, it is definitely not that cut and dry.
Yeah, and Telegram's really interesting because it is kind of this middle space between social media and just a messaging app.
Yeah, right.
And the thing about it, too, is that anybody can look at these, you know, the public channels.
Yes, exactly.
So without saying anything in the chat. So people could be kind of completely invisible. Nobody knows that they're there. They're watching the stuff, and they're still getting the same messaging. They're still getting the same dates for protests. They're still, like, organizing, but they can be sort of just subscribe to a channel and
you don't even need to be subscribed. You can just know the name.
Just looking into it and getting that flow of information without ever having, like, formal organizing, so to speak.
And it's
it's really hard to say that, like, you know, these people planned this, because there's a lot of plausible deniability
and
that anybody was involved.
There's so much easy hyperlinking between groups and channels and everything, so it's so easy for someone to move between ideology and to go from kind of, like, the base level shit into the much deeper stuff. Extremely quick.
Very quick, yeah.
Extremely quick. Well, that's, like, the thing that is
by design.
The thing that's good for them about Telegram is that you have all of the people that are vulnerable to, let's say, new ideas in one place.
Yeah, that's a big thing you get.
Right.
Recruitment.
Exactly. If you're trying to plan a collapse, you're going to need a lot more people than the numbers that the people who want a collapse actually have. So the easiest way to kind of move things along is to start inserting their ideas and their discourses and kind of altering the vibe of certain digital environments manually until they have what we can kindly call cannon fodder.
Yeah.
Yep. Or even starting their own and saying, like, you know, this is a MAGA platform, and it's actually just, you know, a bunch of accelerationists who made it.
We
made it to recruit them.
Yeah, we definitely saw attempts of this with, like, QAnon, of people who are way more accelerationists trying to use QAnon people as cannon fodder.
Extremely,
it was successful. It wasn't just attempts.
And they did it, and QAnon people died.
Well, that, and then also you've got, like the idea of the Boogaloo, right, that's been co-opted to try to appeal to leftists, and, I mean, there's a really good article by Left Coast Right Watch that goes into one of those chats, and they're basically like, yeah, really try to push these ideas of really try to push talking points like Black Lives Matter and all this. We want to get these protesters on our side. And then you also have some blatant, like, white supremacist groups who are also using the Boogaloo to appeal to.
And how much of that, too, is, like, how much of that is sort of real, genuine, like, I am not racist. I believe in Black Lives Matter. Like, I want to be part of this, even though I'm a Boogaloo. Or, like, how much of it also is kind of reminiscent of what we were talking about yesterday, and I also don't want to step in it, but, like, with, you know, the idea of, from Manson of, like, Helter Skelter and, like, causing that race war. It's like, they what they would do is, like, try and frame black people for it and say, like, this was, you know...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like...
And so how much of it is saying, like, this is Black Lives Matter... And they want people to see that after they do a boo.
The Boogaloo group that showed up in Portland in July of 2020 when the protests against the feds were happening, you know, they showed up and were all like, yeah, we're here to support Black Lives Matter and stand against the federal government and stuff. And they had some very suspicious patches that it took me took me about a year to figure out what they were. And it's like this accelerationist, like... It ties into a whole bunch of, like, eco-fascist propaganda stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, like, they're saying these things while they have these very obscure patches. And, yeah, this is an important reason why we need people who are not very smart, like, I will say Jimmy Dore, who gives these people platforms, are some of the worst and are going to cause a lot of problems because they have no idea what they're doing. Or they know what they're doing and they're just bad.
Yeah. And, like, that Boogaloo thing kind of serves a twofold purpose in that you can bring people who self-identify as leftists into the movement, but you also have a really good scapegoat for, like, actual action. Like, that was a big thing that we saw in Minneapolis when things first popped off and, like, precinct was getting burned down, and suddenly people on the internet start losing their minds about the Umbrella Guy.
Umbrella Guy!
The Umbrella Guy at the AutoZone. Yeah. And there was a guy who was indicted. He was a Boogaloo boy who was indicted for... like, headline said burning down the precinct. He fired a weapon.
He fired a gun on, like, near the wall.
Exactly. And so that, at the same time, takes away agency from left-wing movements.
Yes.
And the state's able to be like, look, see, it's just
it's okay to crack down on them because they're all, you know, wild white supremacists.
Exactly.
Or even just from any autonomous movement that forms the people in a community that isn't, that we wouldn't necessarily refer to as leftists, just pissed off people. I mean, that's what we saw in every single, you know...
Every big city.
The young kids who are fucking pissed off and are going to go smash it, and it's like saying all of this is people from outside of the town, where it's like, I know
outside agitators.
Yeah. It's a tale as old as time. Like, outside agitator has been used since before the Civil Rights.
It's a very old state talking point. Yep. Yeah.
What are you going to say, Matt?
Yeah, I was going to say also, I mean, it's somewhat related to that. We were talking about using, like, QAnon as cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And it also ties into the SovSit conversation we were having. So, my research, I focus on Christian identity, this white supremacist ideology, and how it's grown since the 90s until now through, like, the internet and all that fun stuff. This whole point they've been pushing lately is to, like, with Christian identity, the whole thing is they are preparing for the apocalypse, which they call the tribulations, and they see modern CI folks see the Boogaloo as, like, the tribulation that's coming. So what they're trying to do is go off-grid and really try to, like, establish this new land for, like, to protect their kids and everything from, like, pollution and all that shit, but also to be away from the collapse and be able to survive it. And then while they're doing all that, like, prepping homesteads and, like, compounds and stuff, they're also, like, pushing, election fraud conspiracies and all that on, like, QAnon and the MAGA crowd.
Not because they believe it.
They don't believe it. They know it's bullshit, but they can use it to accelerate collapse.
Just like January 6th.
Yes, so exactly. Yeah. Like, yes. I mean, there were groups when Joe Biden won the presidency, or won the election, whatever, some groups being like, yeah, really try to push this theory, this conspiracy about election fraud. Even if you don't believe in it, just push it, because that helps our cause.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's something to be really mindful of, too. Forgot where else I was going with that. But,
well, yeah, a lot of them don't mean what they say. They'll say things that'll push other people to do something that they don't necessarily want to do. And that's a lot of, like, during January 6th, so much excitement because they could see that the QAnon crowd were actually mobilizing.
So they
said to them, like, to themselves, like, you know, get them mobilizing for the white race, get them mobilizing for, you know, our cause. And they've really successfully been able to infiltrate that and be able to get some people on board with some of it.
Yeah.
Just based on using their rhetoric.
I know I talked about this on our podcast, but you could see it. Like, I reported on January 6th in person, and, like, you could watch it happen. Someone with a skull mask on, or a Proud Boy, or an Oath Keeper would literally come back from the police line, grab a group of people, yell something at them about QAnon or the storms upon us, and throw them up to that riot line.
The New York Times did a really good visual investigation of how those extremist groups used MAGA people and QAnon people as their foot soldiers.
The QAA folk, QAA did a really good breakdown on their J6 episode.
QAnon Anonymous podcast. Yep.
Yeah.
But it's also, not to link everything to Christian identity, which I have a tendency to do, but it's very ideologically similar to QAnon, like from a Christianity point of view. Like, QAnon is like so close to the edge of Christian identity, it's very scary. Actually, I talked about it on Jake Hammerhand's Q Clearance podcast, but there's also, like, not only trying to accelerate things through them, but also trying to recruit them through these, like, very, very similar talking points about, like, the synagogue of Satan and all that.
Saying that
nonsense.
Christian identity is an entry point for some of them. Some of them bring it up as an entry point into further, like, accelerationist Nazi shit, but, like, they will start with Christian identity because they think that it's more packageable to people who already believe in QAnon.
Well, exactly. I mean, like Will was saying, a lot of this comes from these kind of boomer conspiracies and anti-vax groups, and you're not going to be able to get, Meemaw and Pap-Pap into, like, Wotanism or something like that.
Well, if you try hard enough.
You can, sure. But, like, Christianity is something that's palatable. It's something that's normal to them. And as you can kind of slowly tweak it through QAnon, you can get them to this much more extreme place.
And when we talk about Christian identity, I think we should, like, maybe Matt, you could define it.
Christian identity, it's this radical offshoot of Christianity that sees all white people as the true Israelites from the Bible. And they also think Jewish people are all literally the spawn of Satan. There's this really dumb theory they came up with and, like, kind of rewrote the whole Bible off of called, can I name it? Is that okay?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Dual seed line theory, where they say, like, the story, if you know about, like, Adam and Eve and all that, they had Cain and Abel. Right? So they see Cain was the offspring of Eve and the devil, and he's literally the spawn of Satan, and then he intermingled with all these races that were there before Adam and Eve, and created this demonic race, and it's really, really fucking dumb.
But it's still here.
It is. Yeah. It's been here for a hot minute.
And it's probably going to keep going.
It's going to get worse. Calling it now. It's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah, but, and the whole thing is they essentially, like, worship, like, a Nazi Jesus. They see Jesus only, was really only talking to the white race, and that Christianity and, like, God only is able to be perceived by the white race. And
before you start laughing at these people, because yes, it does sound very silly, keep in mind that these are extremely dangerous. This is one problem with QAnon, when liberals just start laughing about how crazy it is, and then they're so surprised at January 6th. We're like, no, like, they're actually dangerous.
Christian identity is...
Because he's been mentioned in a lot... Yeah, and Christian identity has been mentioned in various manifestos linked to, actual terrorists.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Very, like, organized groups.
Like, I mean, historically, you look at...
A big part of, like, with Christian identity and with a lot of these kind of, like, a lot of them base their, like, whole historical context of, like, Arianism on this rewriting of history based on a fake study that was done in Nazi Germany about where some Proto-Indo-European languages came from. And so they believe that, like, white people came from an area that's, you know, you could generally say is sort of near the Black Sea. And that it's based on this, like, strange idea that, like, Sanskrit is not the oldest language, but, like, are you pointing the gun at me because I'm stepping in?
You're getting real close.
You're getting real close.
On the edge.
The historical context, I think, it actually is useful, and it shows that's not. There is actual.
Yeah,
things that can be traced back from this.
Because they really tried to push this. They made a lot of fake studies that you could spend a lot of time researching this and believe that it's true, because there's just so much written about it. And I think this is, like, a tactic that they really tend to do with historical revisionism a lot, is just crank out essay after essay, even if it's wrong, even if it's totally, like, based on false data or just skewed data. They don't care. They just write about it, and they think that, like, having more written about it makes it more legitimate.
And that's what we are have been talking about this whole time we've been not recording, is there's just an overflow of content that is so easy to access, you know, not necessarily from these specific groups they're talking about, just from the further right in general.
Oh, yeah.
They just overflow the content. It's like always the top shit on Facebook.
To give an idea of how pervasive even that idea of, like, where Indo-European languages came from, like, when I still went to college, I took a Religions of South Asia course, and we had to spend, like, multiple days where our professor went through these myths about, like, what was the Aryan invasion, which, like, was... There are Aryan people. That is a thing, historically.
They're Iranian.
Yes, they're not white people. But, like, going
depends
through...
Depends on your definition of white people.
Sure.
But they whiteness believe it's is based relative. On language. They think of Aryanism as, like, referring to a linguistic pattern.
Yeah, but, like, in a university course, we still had to go through and, like, debunk these myths because they've gotten so pervasive within culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another thing I want to say is that kind of these more entry-level conspiracy ideas... It is hard to overemphasize how small the space is between the entry-level stuff and the much harder stuff.
It can happen extremely quickly.
Extremely fast.
It does happen extremely
fast. I'll give an example. I went to, I was reporting on an anti-vax protest, and they went straight into talking about New World Order and Project Lockstep and the Rothschilds and the Bilderbergers and, like, the Sabbateans and David Icke shit. Just me, and this was the middle of the day in, like, a metropolitan area with a bunch of boomers and Trump hats who are getting this, like, hardcore shit pumped at them.
Or you, saw that a lot with the Nashville bombing, too. Like, immediately it was like, oh, it was actually an attack on Dominion, and also it was orchestrated by the Rothschilds to destroy evidence of voter fraud.
I forgot that was a whole
thing. Yeah, and then also there was a whole... Like, there was a bunch of stuff that came up. There was a big conspiracy that it was actually a missile strike. I had to talk my grandpa down from that video.
Oh, my... Really?
I
didn't know that one.
There was a video that circulated for a while about that, and I had to get into a conversation with my grandpa, who at the time was super isolated because of COVID, and that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other problem,
And I had to, like, talk him down and show him, like, no, here's a video from somebody I knew who was, like, somewhat in the area and saw the explosion and filmed it. Like, and there was not a missile anywhere near
Tennessee. Yeah, one of the data studies I've done is and worked on is using big pool and small pool Discord servers of far right extremists, far right militia groups, and very, very, like, accelerationist skull mass type networks, and looking at the big pools and the small pools and seeing the at mentions between them. And there was not one person who was more than three nodes away from anybody else. It can't be overstated how close people are from entry to very, very, very extreme types of goals.
Yeah.
And
ideologies.
Ideologies that explicitly push violence. And, you know, another point I want to bring up is, there's been much said about QAnon. It isn't going away. It's just not called QAnon anymore. With these anti-vax mobilizations, those mobilizations and groups aren't going away. They're just going to continue to shift and evolve their focus. And
the networks stay.
The networks stay around.
And they're planning for it, though.
They've
designed it that way. So sometimes I find the normie stuff first. Sometimes I find the crazy stuff first. But, I mean, not even that long ago, I came across a particular social media profile that was explicitly calling for acts of terror and attempting to organize acts of terror and displaying acts of terror, which is, like, an immediate problem that needs to be dealt with. However, they had multiple alternate accounts that you follow that path, and on their other accounts, they're sharing, like, Tucker Carlson stuff. Things that your grandparents are going to watch, right? Like, and that is done on purpose to try to, like, siphon people out of more...
quote-unquote mainstream versions of, like, conspiratorial thinking directly into, like, you should start exploding things.
Yeah. And even more, let's say, left of center conspiracy thinking ties into this
as well. It does. Yeah.
And it's not, you know, conspiracy theories are not solely a thing of the right, which pisses me off to no end.
I just want to back you up on that. Like, I think there's this implicit idea that the left is immune to conspiracy theories when it very much is not true at all.
Nobody is immune.
I just wanted to emphasize that point.
Yeah, that idea, though, of, like, never being that far from the serious stuff is something that's really, really observable, even beyond, like, a data level. I used to, like, consult with local newsrooms on how to report on things, and one of the big points I always tried to drill in was, like, if you fuck this up and you frame this the wrong way, it will have consequences. And if this is stepping in it too much, we can cut this.
That's why we keep talking about stepping in it. This is literally the concept of stepping in
it. But, like, the Dylann Roof. Dylann Roof started his journey to radicalization by reading about Trayvon Martin in local news websites and local newspapers, and then Googling black-on-white crime. And his first result...
Yeah, the first shit that comes up.
Yeah, was...
Many people were radicalized by the same exact thing.
Exactly. And, like, it did not take long for him to go from, I am reading local news articles that are framed this specific way, to, I am killing people.
Yep.
Now, that's not normal. Of course, like, a lot of people are not going to be reading local news and then suddenly start to think this way. Exactly. But, like, there is a concerted effort by some very specific people who would like to make that pathway easier.
It's stochastic terrorism.
It's interesting because we can't like define it really as terrorism. What are they doing? They're really just they're just saying things. They're just encouraging people to do things. And like they're not doing anything wrong. We can't really call it terrorism.
Yeah, the most dangerous people in this game are usually not the ones doing the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's the people behind the scenes trying to get people to go on these paths in the first place.
Looking for people who are willing, and then so they see somebody reading local news, maybe, and they want to make that pathway easier for to go from local news to Dylann Roof. Like, because that's not a normal jump.
No.
But they really want to find people who are looking at local news like that, and then say to them, like, well, okay, you look at this, now look at this. So
trying to tie this back to climate change, do you see a similar pathway? Instead of someone Googling, you know, black and white crime, like, Googling stuff about collapse and like, modern civilization.
Oh, yeah. Doing the Eric same thing. Stryker. Yeah. I don't know. Eric Stryker has been on about this, and I think that he's relatively, like, middle point that people get to. Like, fairly, like, average people do listen to things like Eric Stryker.
Yeah, he's a very, like, entry-level explicit Nazi.
And
another thing, and cut me off if we don't want to go in this direction.
Uh-oh.
But, you know, one of the biggest places where we see young people getting into conspiracy theories is TikTok.
It is TikTok.
Okay. That's where I'm
going. All right. Yeah. Are we talking about TikTok now?
TikTok.
Ted K memes on TikTok.
Cut that.
We're not cutting that. That is within the branches of the pod.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest entry point I've seen for a lot of things remains crisis.
Various events. And the thing is, our upcoming climate scenario is going to give people an easier jumping on point.
Well, yeah, we were talking about how, like the mythology of, like black-on-white crime and all this stuff. They're trying to create a situation that, you know, with the sense of urgency that justifies fascism, which on its own is unjustifiable and ridiculous.
But when there's a crisis, that's when people sign on.
Climate change is the existential threat that they've been trying to artificially create, and they no longer have to. They now get to skip a lot of steps and save a lot of energy by just pointing at the fact that everything is literally on fire, and that makes it so much quicker. We have to do something. We have all the guns. Now would be a great time to join in on our power grab.
This is our Weimar era hyperinflation type shit.
Yeah, I mean, this is like when you can't get food from the grocery store anymore because of supply chain problems, or when everything around you is on fire. You don't need like a you don't need a great replacement theory.
Nope.
No, you don't need any of that.
You don't need to say that the Rothschilds are behind it. You
have enough,
just need to wait.
You have enough things that you experience yourself.
And it's much scarier when you can't, because I can't, like...
And, like, how do we stop
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I can't fucking debunk that.
It's harder. Yeah.
The world is literally on fire. It's a problem, and something needs to be done about it. I don't like your solution, but something needs to happen.
So what do you think on this path, and this is going to get a whole lot more speculative, but, like, what can we do to make people falling down those pathways less often? Like what are
put
the
it with the
that
doomer shit.
Yes. That is that's one of the things that we're trying to do on the pod, is make sure that people do not fall down the doomer pathway. Because, yeah, that does get people along down this path a lot.
Eco-extremism is logical. Like, against, like, against most types of extremism, eco-extremism is the most logical. Like, you look at it and you say, we need a radical change right now. And that's correct. It's just the way that they go about it is very, very different. And that's why, like, you know, eco-fascism is very different. It's its own type of eco-extremism. And there's in green anarchy. That's a very different type of eco-extremism. Like, these are all different parts of something that almost has the same goals, but wants to go about them very, very, very differently. And it's so easy to just look around and see how everything's on fire and think, like, the government's doing nothing about it. The government starts doing something about it, and then suddenly it's the state's too big because we're in communism, you know? So they all have, like, different goals, and it's very conflicting on how to deal with it.
Yeah, and like, even with the very different tactics between green anarchy and, like, fascist eco-extremism, they also will get to different end goals, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you know, like, your basic amprim wants a very different life than your, stepping-in-it-pilled fascist, right?
But a collapse can only benefit the right. It can't. A collapse can only benefit the people who already have power, who are already able-bodied, who are already stocked up on guns, who already,
does frustrate me with there being anarchists who are, like, rooting for the collapse, because you're not going to win. Like,
collapse is going to get you put behind a fence somewhere.
You're not
going back
or put on the wall.
Yes.
Yeah, well, they've got very strict ideas of which people count as human, and the goal of majority of fascist movements is to, you know, purge the ranks of the people they see as lesser. And
purge
they have
the weak.
They have very precise ideas about who they plan on letting survive the collapse.
All right.
So let's... I think it's time to start talking about, and tell me if I'm taking this in the wrong direction. You know, what the fuck can someone do who's listening to this?
Yeah, right?
Recycle.
No. Stop recycling. It's all getting buried in the Oregon forest.
Just talk to Joe Biden.
Just vote.
Vote
it away.
Vote it out.
Yeah,
collapse away.
Let me...
Like, what can you do to, like...
Start local. Find a local group. Find a local direct action group.
Yes.
Investigate that group and see who is behind it, but start locally. It has to start at the local level, because if the collapse comes,
not the collapse, but like
a collapse,
local collapses.
There's
continuous disasters.
Yeah.
Continuous disasters are going to affect at the local level. No, talk to your fucking neighbors.
To your family. Like, especially you try to get your family on these paths that lead to helping your neighbors instead of, you know, making friends with the church militia.
Before you buy a gun, learn how to fucking garden.
Yes.
Yeah.
But buying a gun and that sort of thing is good. It's good to know how to use firearms.
Basic emergency preparedness.
Yes, but learn how to put on a tourniquet.
Learn how to feed yourself.
Learn how to grow some fucking food. Learn how to cook that fucking food. Get an knife back. All that comes before, like, you get to be a Fallout character or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
Two big first aid training.
Do you want to buy an knife?
Oh, yeah, an individual first aid kit. You can buy them online.
Buy them online,
yeah.
You can buy
Take
them in gun
class.
Stores. You can,
yeah.
You can buy them in, like, some pawn shops, yeah.
I like North American Rescue, or North River Rescue.
I'm sure we'll talk about IFAX more in the pod.
Yeah. There are two big things. One, we all have a moral obligation to consistently counter the black pill, doomer shit, everything is coming to an end. Like, it doesn't have to. That's optional. Like,
things are going to get bad, but there's degrees of
badness.
There's
degrees of bad. We can stop it from being...
We don't need civilizational
collapse. Right, we don't need civilization to end. Like, that can be done. Step two, we also have an obligation to counter the individualist stuff and focus our efforts more towards community and relationships. And that is so, so important, because every idiot that's going to buy a gun and have a bunker not only is not going to make it, but it's going to screw the rest of us. Like, this has to be a communal effort.
And on the civilization thing, like, we do need the civilization to change.
Yes.
Like, we need human society, as we lay out, has a lot of problems. I understand people's critiques of human civilization.
But we also still need a society.
But, yeah, we need places that, you know, people are going to gather and people, you know, provide the things that we have. I noticed that can be a loaded word in certain political circles. So, I'm not, you know, we're not getting into, like, civilization theory and that kind of anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would argue any ideology or idea, such as the Boogaloo, that kind of hypes up a collapse is generally one you should stay away from. Anything that makes the collapse sound like a
makes it sound sexy.
It does. Personal glory.
As I think it's important to remember, like, if there was some massive civil conflict that happened, I think the people who would suffer the most are the non-combatants, the
as
people
we'll
who
talk
don't
about.
Want anything to deal with it. Like,
yeah. As we'll talk about on an upcoming episode of Terrorism Bad.
We'll do plugs at the end. Put the gun back in your pants.
Hold yourself together.
I was talking about historical precedent earlier, about things that we've seen in the past with collapses and how people with guns and people who with training end up being the ones who gain power. Something that, like, I was specifically reading about that was, like, the Rwandan genocide.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, 3 months where most of the Tutsi people were wiped out. There are conflicting numbers, so I'm not gonna specifically say any, but, you know, the more recently, like this year, earlier this year, was only when Rwanda admitted what it was, that it was a genocide. And, the people, the armed forces were the ones who became, like, the leaders, and they were backed by the government.
Good thing that can't happen in America.
And... it's like
it can't happen here, though.
Yeah,
nope, it cannot. We are immune to this in our spot
the
of the world.
Is called "It Will Not Happen Here."
Not if I can help it.
The other thing is, look at where you get your information from. Seriously, no matter who you are, take a long, hard look at who you get your information
even
from.
Even if you're on the left,
especially if you're on the left. You know, if you want to hear about something that's happening in an area, look at the people who are actually on the ground reporting
local
that.
People.
Don't just rely on, like, news aggregators, especially on Twitter.
Yep.
Seriously.
Oh, really bad.
No,
do not rely on Twitter.
There's been a
Twitter
lot of bad, very bad faith news aggregators on Twitter who are posing as leftists. This has been a huge problem
and
in 2020.
Even leftists who just don't do their due diligence.
Or just do a very bad job.
People who call themselves, like, counter-extremism or counter-terrorism researchers, and they are really talking about Antifa. They say that they are counter-extremism researchers, and they pose that way, and they look sometimes like they could be, sometimes like they're not, but like, you know, varying degrees of like legitimacy, but like, they focus only on like the left wing stuff. They don't think
about the actual mass threats coming from.
It has to be this idea of like keeping it balanced, right? Like not making it just like a far right issue, which I would argue, I think a lot of other people would, that this kind of stuff is more concerning.
It is not only a far-right issue, and there is, like, merit, definitely, to looking at left accelerationism, which is not anti-Semitic.
Acceleration came from Marxism.
For the record. Like, left accelerationism is not talking about anti-fascist, but, there's really not time to like get into
no,
all
no,
of
yeah.
this.
Is a whole
but like,
thing.
I mean, but it does.
Left accelerationism will be its own episode.
But what some people do, posing as, you know, people who have credibility and are able to kind of sway opinion, they are not really doing what they say that they're doing. They're really just trying to shift the narrative. Of racially motivated violent extremism, which is a big, obviously, issue right now, to being like BLM is racially motivated violent extremism, and they want to push that narrative further and further.
I think, and let's kind of probably start to like wrap up and say our final thoughts on, you know, this whole topic. I know we did not get to talk about like eco-defense very much. If anyone has any final thoughts on that and how they see it kind of growing and how they see the state's response to it that might be worth briefly mentioning. But yeah, let's kind of go around in a circle and give kind of everyone's, you know, final thoughts on the subjects.
I think collapse is bad, and I think that well, I mean, that's my main thing, but anything that's appealing to you on like an ecological level that's collapse related is something you should be very wary of, and I think you should be very wary of, like, generally everything. I feel like that's kind of like a butchered.
Yeah, be careful about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess in my opinion, the idea of total collapse is very misleading because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And disasters don't work like that. Nope. You're not going to suddenly reset one day. Everything is going to suck, and you're going to need to fight for whatever semblance of a society that you want to see in the world.
Talk to your fucking neighbors. Get to know the people in your city, in your neighborhood. There are people doing good shit in whatever city, town you live in, most likely. If not, you can start it. Look at your local mutual aid network. Look at the people who are taking action around and get involved. Seriously, you know, it could be going out into a park Saturday mornings and just, like, giving out food and talking to the people who are most affected.
Talk to people.
Seriously. Yeah, I mean, everyone's a person, you need to talk to them.
Touch grass.
Talk to people. Yeah, if you need, like, the most basic thing to start on any sort of mutual aid work, try to find a Food Not Bombs chapter in your
area.
Yes.
They're well-organized. They're easy to join. You don't have to put on block and fight a cop. It's a good entry point.
And it's great. It's great training for disaster relief.
Yes. Yeah.
If you have money and you want to help, seriously, just give cash to unhoused people
on
the street.
Give money to people.
Give money directly to people.
Yep. My last thoughts are just that I think the idea of collapse, or whether actual collapse themselves, environmental or otherwise, will always be something to rally behind. Like, it is always an entry point as well as a motivator.
From all sides.
From all sides. But it's like when these things become very salient, like was mentioned before, when they're outside of your door, that's when, you know, that's when, like, the ideology kind of hits the pavement. Like, what is actually going to play out, what is actually going to happen, and how that's going to affect people is very real. So building community, you know, building connections, and just understanding, you know, who is in your community is probably one of the most important things.
Yeah, the idea of collapse is a romantic and ridiculous notion come up with people who are, like, really into, like, apocalyptic thinking and the version of themselves where they get to be the main character. So first and foremost, take care of each other. There are a lot of people out there who want to manipulate you and want to change the way you think about things, and they really, really want you to buy in to the end times, and you don't have to because you're smarter than that.
Yeah, it's not hopeless. We really have to move away from hierarchical thinking. Our society really incentivizes hierarchical thinking. And, it's like you were saying, Toothpick, like, we really need to just be focusing on people, like, give things to people, because, you know, somebody doesn't have to, you know, earn, you know, respect and earn humanity. For some reason, we try and make it seem like that, but people are people. People are in different circumstances usually because of just the way that the world is. And, you need to organize locally. You need to help your own people and stay away from the internet. Shit.
Stop posting,
even though I will keep doing it because I'm the good poster. Who wants to plug the pod?
Which pod?
Your pod.
Our pod.
Follow at terrorismbad. We're on. That's our.
What,
app, right?
what is the pod? Like what do y'all do?
Yeah, we go through portrayals of terrorism and extremism
and conspiracies
in popular media, and we look at it from the perspective of people who study this and say, did this succeed in portraying these things, or did it, as it more often does,
cause problems?
Completely fail and cause us all personal problems.
Become propaganda and
yes.
Alike.
Did you make terror propaganda, or did you make good media about terror?
That is a thin line, Emmy.
Such a thin line. I've made a career out of it.
That is the thin terror line.
Yeah.
Do you want to plug your fantastic group?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with, you can read anything I write at antihate.ca, and we do just general reporting on far-right extremism in Canada, as well as infiltration
podcast.
Oh, and I also host a podcast called The Unusual Show.
Yeah, if you want to keep up to date on extremism in Canada, their group is one of the, is probably the best one around right now, in my opinion.
Absolutely the largest.
And you do very good work. You keep your eye on my home country where my family lives, so thank you for that. And I'm very happy to be talking with you guys in the beautiful woods where we have no cell service, so we can't post. And that's good, and we're going to continue doing that and stop using this microphone. So goodbye. Yeah, and Terrorism Bad, the podcast.
Terrorism is bad.
With that wraps up the Terrorism Roundtable Forest Discussion episodes. Thanks for listening to all of us rant about our specific weird niche focuses and hopefully trying to have it within the useful context of climate change. You can follow me at Hungry Bowtie. You can follow the podcast, Happen Here Pod and Cool Zone Media on Twitter and I believe Instagram. You can follow some of the researchers I interviewed on their podcast at Terrorism Bad. So that wraps up this discussion. Thanks for listening. See you later in the podcasting verse, the podverse. Okay, goodbye.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.